Appreciate that. Well, good morning. Well, you ready to? Barbara's not ready to wrap up the Ten Commandments, but are you guys ready to wrap up the Ten Commandments? I am. So, all right. Yeah, there's only ten. You remember the old jokes? Remember the 15 commandments? Moses said he talked God down to ten. What was the bad news? Adultery was still in. Okay. So today, the last of ten, as Barbara's pointed out, is coveting. And this is one of those where there's some twists, because it looks pretty straightforward, because we have an understanding in our culture today of what it means to covet. And it's a pretty clear one. But when we look at it more closely and we begin to think, well, 3,000 years ago, what did this actually mean back then? Or actually more like over 3,000 years ago. The idea of covet in the commandment had a different meaning from the one that we use today, because we put a modern mindset to it. So for the next few minutes, we're going to kind of put ourselves back in the idea of what did it originally mean back then. So Exodus 20:17, as usual, there's two versions, Exodus and then Deuteronomy. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, your male or female slave, ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Okay, you got it? What's covered? Everything, okay? That's done. And then Deuteronomy gives a slightly different order and then adds an item, and scholars think that this may be because Deuteronomy may to some degree represent a later time when the situation has changed, because originally the Israelites were Bedouins, right, traveling. So what would they have not had? Houses, cities, crops. They were not agriculture, things like that. So Deuteronomy has this: neither shall you covet your neighbor's wife, neither shall you desire your neighbor's house or field. And that may become an updated version. Now, you know, now they have fields. They're in the land. Male or female slave, ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. So the adding of the field is different. Two differences, though, that we want to look at just kind of real briefly. One, in Exodus, the wife is listed as property. It was, you know, 3,000 years ago, you know. And in, you had the house listed, then you had the contents of the house, and of course the wife would be part of that in that society. Deuteronomy, she's not listed as part of the property. She's listed separately, distinctly. And that probably represents a shift in the society. Secondly, you've got the specifically lifting up the neighbor's field, which again is probably an indication by the time Deuteronomy is written, they're actually in the land. They've switched from being sheep herders and traveling Bedouin. They now have crops and stuff. And so we have in Deuteronomy, for example, a lot of legislation about crops. And then we have crops that we take to the temple and stuff. So the issue that we're dealing with today is not the same as stealing, because sometimes you tend to think that it's kind of related. You know, well, if you covet, what are you thinking about? Mine. You know, I'll get it. You may remember The Little Mermaid. You see The Little Mermaid movie? Never mind. I work. Different age group. Okay. Both deal with what's wrong. Tenth Commandment takes the issue of stealing to a new level. Perhaps not the level that we're inclined to think about. That's what we kind of look at. So the Hebrew word for covet is different from stealing. And in our culture, it's interesting. In our culture, we tend to think, I think pretty consistently, when we think of covenant, don't you think psychologically? You're dealing with what's internal, you know, the internal desires that are there and stuff. So, and that in our society, we do that. And so in this view, that what's really the topic of the Tenth Commandment, what's being forbidden is the desire. That would be a modern twist on that. What we're really talking about, so if it's a, you know, if it's adultery, what is the real issue? Lust. If it's stealing, what is the real issue? Coveting, kind of thing. So we tend to internalize that. We can see this in modern dictionary terms, nothing new here to us, but the Merriam-Webster dictionary says that covet is to wish to earnestly, and to desire what belongs to another. And the language is very telling. You want, you wish, you desire. So it's all internal language before there's anything external. Culturally, we're kind of in line with that. We actually get that from the Greek culture. The Greeks tend to internalize things. They would talk about that in the Greek world, that what's the worst thing that could happen? Your passions or your desires get out of control. And so the Greek life was based on using reason, this is the language, to rule the passions. And that way you would have the kind of life that's good. See that in much of Christian history, that inner focus, that desire to control that. Usually meaning that if fill the commandment, this is what we're going to do. We need to eliminate the desire, and if we eliminate the desire, we've actually fulfilled the commandment. Okay. This is not how it was understood originally in the biblical world or in the Ten Commandments. So what we're going to do this morning is just kind of take a little bit of a look at that. The focus on desire is not the primary concern of the commandment. It's included, but it's not the primary concern. Whenever time we get a scripture that deals with this, it pops up, the difference pops up real clearly. The concern, again, for the psychology, the inner emotional life in itself, that's a modern idea. It's just like in literature, a lot of what we have, like character development, there was no character development in ancient literature. The character was remained the same. That's just a modern kind of concern. So the same is true here. Grows out of a Greek concern about the focus on the inner self, about motivation. This is not found in ancient Israel, not found in the Ten Commandments. In the Ten Commandments and in the Torah and in Jewish tradition, primary concern is not with belief, and it's not the inner life. It's laser focused on behavior. So think about it. What do the Ten Commandments all deal with? They all deal with behavior. So it's a little different from us. Specifically, how does desire affect behavior, and how does that behavior then affect other people? We see that connection between that and a lot of the Old Testament language, Old Testament words that the word covenant is used, most always connected with an outward act. So I thought you might like a few examples of this. For example, in Deuteronomy 7, do not covet the silver or the gold that is in idols. Apparently that was an issue. You know, you saw them, they looked very nice. I like to have that in my living room up there, okay? And take it for yourself. So there's that link. Well, I want it, but it doesn't stop there. I take it. Joshua 6:18. As for you, keep away from the things devoted to destruction so as not to covet and take any of the devoted things. So again, it's the link between desire and action. Joshua 7:21. Then I coveted them and I took them. You know, didn't stop there. Yeah. To covet and to take, those two together, is what you will normally see in the biblical material. It's you just don't get stories where it's just coveting by itself without an action of some kind. It seems to be always connected to an action. The concern is not about what the person feels. It's not focused on the inner desire. Matter of fact, when it's condemned, we're going to get a couple of stories in a minute in the Bible where things. Remember David and Bathsheba? He's never condemned for what he desired. Remember King Ahab? In Naboth's vineyard, we're going to look at that. It's again, both stories. It doesn't deal with the desire. It deals with the action. How is that desire manifested in behavior? What the person does with those feelings seems to be the big issue. Particularly, what's it done to other people because of those things. Later centuries, we have the prophets, again, come forward. This is centuries after Moses. Again, dealing with covenant, coveting, condemning it. But again, it's in the connection with behavior. So example, Micah, remember Micah? Micah 6:8, is that, you memorize that as a child? What does the Lord require of you? Do justice, act kindly, walk humbly with your Lord. Sort of a summary of that. Here in Micah chapter 2, they covet fields. That's why you have a commandment, because people were doing it. They covet fields and seize them. They covet houses, take them away. They oppress householder and household, people and their inheritance. So the issue that the prophet was called by God to come address was not just the coveting, but the acting out of that in specific behaviors that was harmful to people. You don't think things have changed much, Jane?
Not much.
And you've got a bit of a track record there, right? A few decades, you've done field research. Yeah.
That's all I do is covet.
That's right. We just moved into confession. Okay. Pressing others, seizing, taking their property. Anyway, In particular, Micah was concerned about the ruling elite of the northern kingdom of Israel. He called them cows of Bashan, if you remember that story, how they oppressed the poor. The connection between covenant behavior comes through several prophet stories. Let's look at two. Remember David and Bathsheba. You taught that in Sunday school, right? Yeah. So you know this story backwards and forwards. So we don't need to know the basic plot. It's interesting, if you go by Bible studies and they cover this, generally, the point the Bible study wants to lift up is what's the real issue that you should be dealing with? Lust, right? That's David's crime. He lusted after Bathsheba, kind of thing. It's interesting, in the biblical story, there's a little bit different deal there. The sin David committed was that he lusted after another man's wife. I don't know how many sermons have been on that, but it's been more than two. Nathan the prophet confronts David on God's behalf. The concern is not. It's not even mentioned. In the biblical story, it never comes up. It's just not mentioned. The point of the story, he's to condemn by the prophet, is how he acted on that desire. Specifically, he did two things. He committed adultery, and he murdered. He arranged to have Bathsheba's husband killed in a battlefield situation. So in 2 Samuel, we have this story. This is the point where God calls Nathan, all that story has happened. God calls Nathan the prophet to address David for his sin. And this was where we pick up the story. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. You think? Maybe. Which thing did he do? And the Lord sent Nathan to David. He came to him and said to him, there were two men of a certain city, a rich one and the other poor. The rich man, and we're in a parable now, the rich man had very many flocks and herds. The poor man had nothing but one little ewe lamb. Now there came a traveler for the rich man, and he was loath to take one of his own flock and herd to prepare for the wayfarer who had come to him. So he took the poor man's lamb, prepared that for the guest who had come to him. This is the great climactic scene. David's righteous indignation. As the Lord lives, whoever did that should die. Now anybody here raised in the King James? Do you remember what Nathan said, King James? Thou art the man. Remember that? Goosebumps, okay, okay. You are the man. You're the one that did that. Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, why have you despised the word of the Lord to do what is evil in his sight? You have struck down Uriah the Hittite with a sword, taken his wife to be your own. You have killed him with the sword of the Amorites. What's David's sin? It's not lust. It's not internal. Yes, that was there, but that's not what God's addressing. God addresses how did this express itself in behavior. David coveted, but the command he broke, which is the 10th commandment, by the way, is not just about feelings, it is not just about desire. His actions and the language is telling to do what is evil in the sight of the Lord, to take and to kill. He's condemned for that. If he had just stopped with looking, probably the story would have had a different ending. Story Naboth's vineyard. We looked at that in the last couple of weeks. King Ahab. That would be, in the Bible, bad King Ahab. Remember Jezebel, his wife? Bad Jezebel. Coveted another man's property. We looked at that story, but again, short version. He can't have it. Remember he was pouting on the bed? And his wife comes in. She's the fixer. She fixes it up. So through her, he has her killed. Has him killed. God then sends the prophet Elijah to the king to condemn him, and we pick up the story at that point. Then the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, go down and meet King Ahab of Israel, who rules in Samaria. He is now in the vineyard of Naboth, the guy who's dead. So he's in the vineyard, gloating, taking possession. There he's gone to take possession. You shall say to him, thus says the Lord, you have killed. And also take a question, have you killed and also taken possession? Ahab said to Elijah, have you found me, O my enemy? Apparently they've had a few run-ins before. Okay. He answered, I have found you because you have sold yourself to do what is evil in the sight of the Lord. And again, what he did was what offended God. Covet is not just about desire. What the Bible focuses on is the intrigues that then flow out of that and how those intrigues shape action and how that action then affects doing what is evil in the sight of the Lord. Writing you may not be as quite as familiar with. There's in the Apocrypha, it's in the Catholic Bible, there are four books of Maccabees. The fourth book of Maccabees is interesting for a couple reasons. It's one of the last to be written, probably written during the time of Jesus. It's actually written in Egypt, in Alexandria. And it's the most Greek of all. So this, you would think, would have more of a psychological side. But it deals with it. So, again, written in the time of Jesus, that's an interesting deal. It comes the closest to this focus on the internal psychological. And so in the fourth Maccabees, we have this statement. The law says you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. And so from this perspective, kind of pro-Greek, we get this. Or anything else that is your neighbor's. In fact, since the law has told us not to covet, I could prove to you all the more that reason is able to control desires. And then it goes in an entirely different direction. It has this Greek understanding of focus on reason, the passion, sounds modern, but then the book kind of comes out an interesting argument. The focus is still on behavior, particularly what to do with others because of those feelings. And at the end of 4th Maccabees, it says that reason alone, which is the Greek answer, will not work. It is not sufficient. And then it argues, that's why God gave us Torah. So why do you need Torah to control what? Behavior. Yeah, desire related, but specifically behavior. Torah is about behavior, front to back. The end of the argument, 4th Maccabees, reason alone cannot control behavior. The Greek answer, use your reason to control your passions, and then everything works. It says, nope, that won't work. Reason alone will not work. Therefore, God gave us the law. God gave us the Torah to guide us in that. And that gives us the path with its emphasis on behavior. Consistently, it's our behavior that harms others, not our feelings. You may agree or disagree with that, but that's the biblical argument. Not a big concern about emotions, but a real big concern about what we do or do not do. Now, Jesus does not directly deal with the 10th commandment, but a few other New Testament documents do. Two in particular I thought might be interesting to look at. Remember the letter to James? Very Jewish orientation. And then kind of from the other extreme, the letter of Paul to Romans. So let's look at these two real quick. Both address coveting, and it's clear that both of them continue this focus on outward behavior, not the internal focus. So James chapter 4, 2, you want something and you do not have it. What's that called? Coveting, okay? So you commit murder. We just saw a couple of examples of that. You covet something and cannot obtain it, so you engage in disputes and conflicts. So yeah, there's the coveting, but what's the issue? The issue is it flows out into specific behaviors. Romans 13, we have this. The commandments, and the list a few, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. And any other commandment is summed up in this word, love your neighbor as yourself. So what's Paul quoting here? It's Leviticus, but through Jesus. Jesus was asked, what's the most important commandment? And he focuses on two. Love does no wrong to neighbor. Paul's a Jew. Love does no wrong. Action-wise, we don't do things to people. Paul's observation, all the commandments are concerned about what we do and about behavior. Love does no wrong. According to Paul, that's what, he's being true to his Jewish heritage here. That's what the commandments are about. Captures the intent of that 10th commandment. Focus on behavior, how that behavior affects others, never just on the psychology and feelings. The feelings are there, but again, that's not the focal point. It's true for all the commandments to live in community. We're called to treat each other in a particular way. So as we look at the 10th commandment, the 10 commandments, the Torah, the Old Testament, the Jewish tradition, there's a pretty consistent line there focusing on what it is that we do and how our actions impact other people's. Later, Jesus will summarize those as a dual commandment. Love God and love your neighbor. And again, the focus of being behavior, love God, love your neighbor. And this is what we're going to turn to next. We have about a 3-week break. But then we're going to go into, I think, about 5 months of just walking through the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus will be taking this material and much more and can walking it through. So 4 weeks from today, we're going to kind of pick up this journey on the 29th of the Sermon on the Mount. Meanwhile, we got 3 weeks. So next week is just a one-off, a one-topic thing. Everybody heard of the atonement? Do we really know what it means? Okay. There's two core beliefs to the Christian faith. One is about who Jesus is, and the other is about what Jesus did. The one about who he is called the doctrine of the incarnation, that Jesus is God. The atonement is about what Jesus did that actually affects us. So I thought next week we've never done that, and I thought that might be fun. And then we're going to bring back a familiar face. You know this guy? He's been doing some research and some work in war, peace, and the Christian faith. So 2 weeks on that. We should have some fun with that. Just war theory, pacifism, all those kind of topics in that. So.